audience, so they know very well that we've been experiencing some very serious growing pains. Staffing, recruiting, hiring, occasionally firing, and we are... You can't hear? Oh, because people are talking, that's why you can't hear. Blanca, who just told everyone to be quiet. She's allowed to talk, she's staff. Okay, so yeah, we've been experiencing serious growing pains, as a result of which we're not onboarding new customers at the moment, except consulting customers. And our existing customers have been experiencing delays in receiving all kinds of reports. So apologies in advance. We will be back on track and onboarding new customers again in the very near future. But until then, a quick introduction. What NTI does is we provide proxy services all over Japan, in particular areas that are internationally well-known and do have occasional property professionals to work with, like in Tokyo, for example. In Tokyo, for example, if you're looking for a family home, people like Emil are very... I say people like Emil, but there's not that many of them, so... Emil... And their company, Plaza Homes, who are sitting somewhere here. Raise your hand. Don't be shy. There you are. And there are quite a few, not quite a few, but there are, okay, I should put it this way. There are quite a few agents who will try to help you. There are very few agents who will actually do a good job at it. But at least they're available and they communicate with you in English. Part of what we'll talk about will explain the difference. But we've been in a unique position for the last 13 years now of bridging this gap and helping people buy, manage, and sell property anywhere in Japan for any kind of purpose. So family homes usually require a lot more hands-on accompanying people to look at many, many, many properties weekend after weekend. We don't do that. But everything else, which is family homes, investment properties, land for development, commercial, all sorts of things we do. And we act as people's proxy. We bridge the gap between them and the Japanese professionals, or the traditional Japanese professionals who cannot work with foreigners or have never done that in the past. And being in that position for over a decade now, we've come to experience, which is a kind of a segue into the topic of this presentation, we've come to realize that there's a huge gap, even though we're talking real estate on this side and real estate on that side, there's a huge gap, not to say a chasm, between how things work or how the buyer side, and in particular buyers who have never worked or bought property in Japan, definitely people who are not living in Japan, what they expect and how they think things will work when they start conducting the purchase, and how they think the professionals on the other side will behave, is just fraught with misconceptions and just plain mistakes. And similarly, on the Japanese side, if they have never worked with a foreigner buyer in the past, they have a whole huge list of conceptions and misconceptions and expectations and mistakes that they've arrived at after years of working with Japanese clients. So they want to try their hand at working with foreigner clients for various reasons, and they run into these barriers that just cause the relationship often to go sour, and in many cases create lots of stigmas that are involved. So first, before we talk about how to avoid that, let's talk about what they're actually saying about each other. So these are the impressions that foreigners have after they've experienced any kind of communication with a few Japanese agents who are, again, not the foreigner-friendly, foreigner-facing ones, but the more traditional types who have maybe decided to try and work with Google Translate and receive some inquiries from foreigners and try to help them buy a property. They've never done it before. This is what a lot of the foreigners say about them. Number one, that they're lazy. They do not go out of their way to do anything. They're just sitting there and waiting for money or a deal to come to them. They will not try their best to make it happen. They say that they are greedy, that they want to get as much money as possible for doing as little work as possible. They say that they are racist, that they just either don't want to work with foreigners or they want to put the foreigners down and tell them that they're doing things wrong, and that they are rigid, that they just have no flexibility in them whatsoever, and that they are very, very rude, which is kind of like a summary of everything above, which boils down into being rude. We're not going to talk about who's right, who's wrong, and what we are going to talk about in a minute is where all of these ideas come from. Now, what the agents say about the foreigners after they've tried working with them, and in many cases have failed, surprisingly enough, they will say that they are rude, that foreigners are very, very rude. They just don't understand how things work. They just have expectations that are ridiculous. They are also extremely, extremely pushy. They keep asking for things at various points in time in which those things are not meant to happen yet. They keep asking for things that shouldn't even be possible, that shouldn't even happen, and definitely that is not the agent's job to take care of. And that they are tire kickers. They will come in and make the agents work a lot for days and weeks on end, and then just ghost or disappear and just submit multiple offers and not go ahead with any of them. And that they are unrealistic in their expectations, and once again, that they are very, very rude. Now, we are mostly a foreigner crowd here, so while we do at NTI do our very best to... So everything that I'm going to do with you now, we also try to do with the Japanese side. We try to explain to them why they are running into all of these complications. We try to explain to them how foreigners think, how the market works in other countries, but that's not the topic of the presentation. Today I'm here to, it sounds like I'm scolding, but I'm not scolding. What I'm here to do is to explain to you how, if you want to get the best results out of working with Japanese professionals, and we'll focus mainly on realtors, what are the mind shifts that you might want to make? And to do that, the first thing we need to explain is why you're having these impressions, if and when you have them. And I know that there are a lot of people here who have already purchased, sold, managed, doing this on a regular basis. That might be a bit boring for many of you who are doing this because you already know what, you already understand what I'm going to explain. I also know that in Tokyo specifically, I keep being educated about that because we don't work in Tokyo that much. In Tokyo specifically, things can be a little bit different. The market here is a lot more internationally oriented, and things like overbidding that we never hear of outside of Tokyo and very, very central Osaka is a thing here. But I'm just speaking nationwide. I'm generalizing on purpose, and I'm particularly referring to traditional Japanese realtors or property professionals that have not had the pleasure of working with foreigners yet. You're one of their first contacts from a foreigner. So the first thing that you need to understand when you contact these people is how their commissions work. So you know the numbers, you've run them in your head a number of times. I know that everybody knows this formula, which I'm about to disclose. 3% plus 60,000 yen plus tax. And if you're indeed shopping for a family home in Tokyo, like the types that Emil was just talking about, we're talking about 80 million, give or take, for an average Japanese family home in Tokyo, the agent stands to gain 2.7 million yen if we go by that formula. Now, I've learned recently that that is the maximum amount that they are supposed to charge, and that it is legally possible to negotiate with them. It's really important for people to understand that that is very uncommon. So if you do have this concept that you might want to negotiate the realtor fee, which is very, very, very rarely done in Japan, it might be a good idea to tell them that before they start working on your behalf, not just get to signing the purchase contract and say, oh, by the way, we want you to half your fee. Because that's, number one, it's just almost never done. And when it is done, if you haven't told them in advance and got their agreement to get to work on this reduced commission, it's also extremely rude to suddenly tell them after they've done weeks of work. So this is what they stand to gain. There's the difference between a seller side and a buyer side agent, which we'll get to in a moment, but let's assume for a moment that you're working directly in front of the seller side agent. They're the ones who are listing the property on behalf of the seller. If they sell it to you, they'll make a 2.7 million commission. If they sell it to somebody else, they'll make that same commission from somebody else. If you're working with a buyer side agent, that agent needs to keep working with you until they find the property that you want to buy, maybe, if you don't change your mind halfway through the process and just abandon the whole project or go to another agent. They stand to gain, so each of these agents stands to gain about 2.7 million Japanese yen. That's about $14,000-$15,000, I think, at the moment. And that's an amount of money that people will, you know, to various degrees, willingly put in a certain amount of work to try and get. And then you tend to get agents who are very gung-ho, doing their best to get you the deal. If they're on the buyer side, they will do their best to find you a deal that will suit your criteria. They'd be a lot more open to it. On the other hand, if we're talking about properties of the type that Anton was talking about, or if we're talking about investment units in a condo in some prefectural city in Japan, or a satellite city that's, let's say, an hour from a major metropolitan center, which tend to be the cash cows that generate the highest yield, so the kind of investments, properties that investors are looking for, or the kind of DIY projects that Akiya hunters are looking for. Let's say 4 million yen property, and there are plenty of those in Japan, they stand to make about $1,300 if they succeed in selling this property. Naturally, there is a limit to how hard somebody will work for the potential to maybe in a few months' time make $1,300, right? So you get a very different type of agent, and they don't get paid unless the property sells, which again is really important to hammer in. They might get paid. In the case of Akiya or investment units, it's very, very likely that the seller will change their mind and just decide that it's too much of a hassle and not sell them at all, sometimes halfway through the process. So they might be, and there is the equal amount of work, if not more, involved in selling these cheaper properties compared to an 80 million yen family home in Tokyo. So they're going to be putting in the same amount of work, potentially more work, because there's more stuff that needs to be checked in the case of a dilapidated older property, to maybe make at the end of it about $1,300 or 198,000 yen. Some agents who are a bit more flexible in their way of thinking and not as rigid might set a minimum amount that they would like to make on this property, and then they would compensate the realtor fee, which is the official commission that they're allowed to charge, with various small other fees to bring it up to, let's say, their minimum is going to be 250,000 yen or 5% of 5 million yen. So they'll add in some facilitation or documentation or translation fees that are not official brokerage fees, but still, they're going to be working for a very, very low amount of money, and you get a very different kind of agent when you're handling these kinds of cheap transactions. So it's really important to understand when you come in with our expectations that we are used to overseas with people that are selling hundreds of thousands and million-dollar properties. This is not the case when you're... I mean, Japan is great. You can buy a lot of cheaper properties here, but the fact that they're cheap means that the agent is not making a lot of money. So there are things that they simply will not do for you. It's not in their job description, for example, to go knocking on doors and finding out if everything that Anton was just saying, the footwork of finding out whether a property is for sale, who it's registered under, send them letters, put flyers in mailboxes to help you find your ideal Akiya for 4 million yen, at the end of which they'll make $1,300. They're not going to do that, and they're not supposed to do that. So this is not their job. It's definitely not in the job description of somebody selling these cheaper houses. Honestly, it's not really in the job description of the people selling the 80 million Japanese yen homes. The fact that they do it is because, number one, they're nice like a meal, or because they stand to make a much higher commission. So expectations need to be tempered when you're working with people, especially on the cheaper end of the scale. Add to all of that the fact that they've never worked with a foreigner before. So we'll get to this at the end of the presentation, but Japan is a big market. The amount, the percentage of foreigners buying property in Japan compared to the amount of Japanese property buying property in Japan is obviously minute. So if they've never had exposure to foreigners before, not exposure as in spoken to a foreigner, but on a business environment, they've never worked with a foreigner before, language can be a huge issue. Not for many of you here who have been living here for a while, but for a lot of these potential buyers coming in. These days, Google Translate, ChatGPT Translate, all of these things have caused more and more agents to try to gambaru and get to try and get interest and inquiries and deal with foreign buyers. Some of these buyers speak very basic Japanese. Some of them don't speak at all and just use translation tools. Same on the agent side. Some of them speak very basic English. Some of them don't speak at all and try to use translation tools. Language is always going to be a barrier. The pace is very, very different in Japan. So we had one of our JREP sessions a few months back. Emil was talking about this topic, and I think we commented, or he commented, that you go to see a property in Australia, in the US, lots of places overseas, you like the property, the agent will say, hold on, they'll duck onto the back of the car, they'll grab their phone, they'll talk to the owner, and they'll let you know how much the owner is willing to take for it, if the deal can go through. Within 20, 30 minutes, you'll know if you're buying this property or not. This is not how things work here. So forms need to be submitted, calls need to be made, and then you have to wait for the call to be returned. Application forms need to be exchanged, faxed in many cases still. People take time to do things. If you if you're a foreigner who's expecting the pace of business to work here as it has been working for you when you've been purchasing properties overseas, you will be hugely disappointed, which leads to all of the other things that we've mentioned before. What you are thinking that the agents are lazy, they're thinking that you're pushy. It's just a matter of you not being used to how things work here, and they not being used to what you would be expecting coming from an overseas real estate environment. Expectations, again, we've mentioned the things that you expect the agent to do for you, maybe things that the agent would do for you in other countries, or if they're working for different levels of commission, not here. And the documentation that you're expecting to receive as well. In Japan, there's this thing, I still can't wrap my head around it, but a lot of government municipalities and very serious procedures in Japan that need to be done strictly in Japanese, government authorities will accept an ad hoc translation from anyone as long as it says who the person is that actually translated it. So in many cases, the agents will give you a summary of the contract or a summary of the forms with, you know, a few points that you need to consider. And that will be the extent of the translation that you receive. So if you're expecting a fully documented official translation of every piece of paper that you're going to be signing throughout the process, not going to happen. If you're expecting the agents to go out of their way to deliver the keys to you in person, again, it depends on the value of the property and depends on how much money they stand to make, but it is not within their job description. If you're expecting them to connect you to utilities, I know, again, that some agents who are working with higher-end properties do that. If you're expecting them to file your tax agent forms, for all of these little things that come with a property purchase or settlement or management or sale that you're expecting an agent to do because they've done that for you overseas, need to be renegotiated, rethought, and in many cases, you just need to give up on that because it's not going to happen. And again, it depends on the scale of the purchase. The way we behave, I just don't know any better way to do it than to give examples. So we've had a few months ago a customer walk into a property. This was a holiday home purchase, not an investment property purchase. They walked into the property to view it with the seller side agent, with us facilitating a remote viewing via Zoom, so to provide interpretation, explain to the agent what they're asking. And their entire mannerism throughout the walkthrough through the house was the mannerism of a person who's expecting to negotiate the price down and is looking for excuses to do that, right? So they'd be approaching, oh, what is that? All with very dramatic and emotional, oh, I didn't expect that. And look at, those things are not done here, right? It's very legitimate to negotiate the price if there's something legit to base the negotiation on. But the way that would be done is, okay, I see that this is such and such. Okay, so I'm wondering how much it would cost me to fix. Let me investigate that, and then I'll get back to you and tell you how much I think it would. I mean, we talk about it. We don't, all of these dramas that we're used to from overseas, from especially Western markets, I'm not aware of how it works in Asian markets. I'm getting the feeling that it might be similar in other countries as well, but we don't do that here. Everything is done in a lot more of a polite fashion. It's okay to negotiate, it's okay to express displeasure with something, but you do that in a politer way. We have another customer just a few weeks ago who received a list of properties that didn't exactly suit their criteria, and they replied to the agent, well, these are all ugly old shacks, and the agent has worked, you know, maybe for a few minutes, maybe for a few hours, collected a bunch of properties that might suit that client's criteria. Might not. Maybe he didn't get the request properly. Maybe they're just not available, what this customer is looking for. But to get back to say these are ugly and I don't like them is just not acceptable behavior in Japan. Those agents will never work with you again. And in many cases, they'll never work with any foreigner again, because you're enshrining the image of this is how foreigners behave. And lastly, again, capacity. So especially when we're talking about people who are selling cheaper homes or helping you buy cheaper homes, and they stand to make $13,000, $15,000, $2,000 per transaction that may or may not happen in a few months or a few weeks down the track, they need to sell a lot of these every month to make ends meet, to put food on the table, very literally, right? So there's a limit to the capacity of work that they will be able to do for you on these budgets. And it's just something to keep in mind when we come in with our requests, which are perfectly legitimate requests, but there are ways and a pace and an approach to handle when we're trying to get those. I try to summarize this in an example. This is not directly related to real estate, and a lot of you may have seen this. It's a meme that's been going around for a while. Originally, I think it was published by somebody from Singapore who wanted to show the difference between a work email sent in Singapore to the same email sent in Japan. So the situation is you've received some data from a working colleague. They've sent you a bunch of information that is just simply outdated. And the person definitely did have access to the updated data. They just either forgot or by omission did not insert the updated data. So the Singapore email reply to that person looks something like this. Please update your data to the latest sales figure and send again. Thank you. Signed, whoever. This is actually a very polite email by Western standards. I grew up in Israel. Wouldn't have looked anything like that. It'd be something more like, are you on drugs? What happened to the sales data? But I mean, this is not a rude email by Western standards. A Japanese person, in most cases, I'll give you time to read this, but the email will first be circling about the weather, about various company activities that took place last week and how much fun they were. Then they'll talk about the meeting that we had a couple of days ago in which the sales data figures were released. And, oh, by the way, those data figures were not included, so sorry for the hassle, but could you please include them and could you maybe send them again? This is the way business is done in Japan. Okay? It's not done that way if you're a big, rude company, shacho, and you're talking to your subordinates. But if you're talking to your colleagues, definitely if you're talking to a customer, you don't talk like that. And that, again, there's nothing wrong with the email on the left. It's just if the person on the other end is not used to working with foreigners and have not received these kinds of emails in the past or these kinds of phone calls or this kind of face-to-face conversation, they will at least be taken aback, if not insulted, right? Because this, as much as it doesn't seem like that to us, is a very harsh email for a Japanese person, unless you've already worked with them and they're used to you, or other foreigners, or you are, I don't know, you've had a few beers together, you have some communication meetings, and you're used to working with each other. If this is your first interaction with this person, I'm not saying do it like that, but try to cushion it a little bit. And I'm as guilty of doing that as anybody else in this room. I'm just talking from bitter experience. Another thing to consider, if you're working with a buyer-side agent, buyer-side agents are people, real estate agents, like Emil again, for example, a lot of the customers that we work with, Mika Gimansan, who's unfortunately not here today, is our favorite agent to work with in that aspect, but buyer-side agents are agents that will help you find the property that you're looking for. So you give them a list of criteria, a list of locations. You point them at various types of properties or lists of properties that you've already researched, or they help them research you on their own. Then they go ahead and contact the listing agents who have been appointed by the seller to sell these properties, and they try to convince them to sell the property to you. So this is a different situation to you approaching the seller agent directly, the person who's actually listing the property. You're using a buyer-side agent who's an added layer in the process, which is, again, a very common process overseas, but not always as common here. And you're asking them to help you source the properties that you're looking for from a variety of listing agents that are listing them. Things to consider about the seller-side agent that the buyer-side agent will be contacting on your behalf or that you'll be contacting on your own directly. Number one, they do not care about you. They do not care about what kind of property you're looking for. They do not care about what kind of investment goals you have or the perfect holiday home that you and your spouse have been dreaming of. They are here to sell this particular property. And if you're not going to buy it, move along because somebody else will, right? They are not here to serve you. They are here to sell this particular property. That's why they're called seller side agent. Secondly, they don't want to share their commission with the buyer side agent, right? The way it works in Japan is seller charges that 3% plus blah, blah, blah to the seller. Buyer charges the 3% plus blah, blah, blah to the buyer. And if it's the single agent servicing both sides, which is perfectly legal in Japan, it's not considered a conflict of interest, then they get to charge both sides. A lot of them don't want to do that. So they don't list their properties on the RAINS database, which is where the other buyer's agents could potentially find it. And when the buyer agents contact them, in many cases, they'll very firmly and strictly say that we are not interested in cooperating with any other agents on this sale. It's greedy, it's detrimental to the seller, definitely detrimental to the buyer, but it's just the way it is. They're not interested, they'll rather wait, even if the seller won't sell the property for 6 months or 12 months, they'd rather wait for a direct buyer to come along, not through a buyer-side agent. They've never worked with foreigners, they don't want to work with foreigners, as opposed to your buyer-side agent who is open-minded and wants to work with foreigners. These people have been appointed by a Japanese seller to sell a Japanese property to the Japanese wider market. They're now being contacted either by a foreigner directly, which they've never worked with or expected to work with, or by a buyer-side agent who's going to take half their commission and is working with a foreigner, which is alien to them, and suddenly being asked to handle a foreign buyer, which they've never done. They didn't sign up for this, to make a long story short, and they are a listing agent. Again, the job is to sell this particular listing with as little complication as possible in the process. Many of them also, most of them, don't have exclusivity. So the longer they spend time talking to you and trying to understand who you are and how much you want to negotiate and what your questions are about this property, and foreigners tend to ask a lot more questions than Japanese buyers, as well we should. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. The more likely it is that this property will be sold via some other listing agent, because there could be five of them listing this property, to somebody else who came in through them. So they don't have the time to spend with you when they should be looking for somebody who might be buying this quickly to avoid losing it to another agent who's listing the same property or has already provided some potential buyers to the seller. And when they finally contact the seller with your list of questions, the seller will say, I just sold it last week via agent such and such, right? So they don't have exclusivity, which means they don't have the time. Now, where does all of this leave your buyer side agent? Aside from the fact that they have to deal with all of that list of annoyances of dealing with the seller side agent, on the other side, they're sandwiched by yourself with your foreign list of questions that Japanese buyers don't ask, with the pace that you use to your behavior, which they may be used to, all of the things that we've spoken about, they're very much sandwiched between yourself and the seller side agent. That leads to a lot of frustration on their behalf, and a lot of supposedly foreigner friendly agents who have been doing this for a while tend to burn out very quickly. We've already worked with a few who have officially had nervous breakdowns of various sorts. It's not a joke, it's a very real thing. So what we want to do is to avoid this. And the reason we want to avoid this is, again, not because we are wrong. There's no wrong or right here. There's no right way to do things. I'm not saying that the way the Japanese agents are dealing with this market is better or worse than the way we are dealing with this market. What I am saying is that we are living and working in Japan. We have an interest in real estate in Japan. Japan is the world's second biggest market, both transaction-wise and transaction volume-wise and capital-wise, second only to the USA. It is also one of the biggest populated markets in the world. There are over 125 million people here. Good few of them are buying and selling properties in Japan as well. I'm not saying that there's no reason for us to not want to do things right and not to insist on what we want to be done, but we need to consider that we're working with a very large market who is 90% non-foreigner oriented, who have doing things in a very uniquely Japanese way and have been doing it that way for many, many, many years. And if we come in here all guns a-blazing and 100% sure that we should be getting our way, which, you know, we may be 100% right about, we're just not going to reach our goals. And the whole purpose of this talk is to help you reach your goals, whether it's to buy a profitable investment property, or the perfect holiday home, or the perfect family home. It's really, if we keep insisting on doing things our way and keep insisting that we're right, in many cases, we're just not going to get there. So not a bad idea to put our egos aside, try to understand how things work, and not in the sense of, you know, behave like they do, but in the sense of maybe how to approach it to try and generate the best results. So we've mentioned that agents in Japan are mostly not foreigner friendly. There are, I'd say, about 15-20% of them who are. That doesn't mean that they're all professional. It just means that they all speak English to various degrees. So how do we pick the ones that we actually want to work with? We want responsive ones, people who tend to respond to phone calls, emails. I mean, I don't know who even calls these days except the Japanese sites. Send emails, line messages, texts, whatever. Just don't call me unless we have an appointment. But we want to make sure that they are responsive, that they're asking questions, that they understand questions, and that they respond to the question and not just automatically responding to emails. We want to make sure that they're Japanese enough. And what I mean by that is that a lot of the foreigner-facing real estate companies are selling machines. They speak English, they have bilingual, multilingual, Chinese, Japanese, French, Italian speaking staff, fancy office in the center of Tokyo, a lot of people answering the phones, and they'll help you buy whatever you want without actually pointing out that you might be buying something which is not 100% the best thing for you. So you do want them to be at least a little bit Japanese in the sense that they'll tick all the checkboxes, make sure that you know what you're buying, make sure that you're reviewing documents before you sign them, that kind of thing. I wasn't talking about you, Plaza Homes. You're not like that. You want to make sure that they're a little bit tech savvy, because that means that they will be able to, number one, have maybe an online chat or a line, WhatsApp kind of group with you and have a conversation, but also that they might be open to digital signatures or Zoom settlement meeting, as opposed to, again, what Emil was describing, people still arriving with suitcases of cash to conduct a settlement, that sort of thing. So a little bit of tech savviness is not a bad thing. On the other side of them being Japanese, you do want them to be a little bit flexible. They need to understand that things work a little bit differently for you, especially if you're a non-resident foreigner. So you might not have a Jumihyo or a Hanko or an Inkan Shome, but you could very easily get a notary public certificate of your address. So they need to be a little bit flexible if they haven't worked with foreigners before, to understand that not everything will work exactly the way that they're used to with their Japanese clientele. And those agents are extremely rare. So when you find them, hang on to them. Keep in mind all of those behavioral tips to avoid losing them. And good luck. Few words, behaviors to avoid. We've spoken about most of it. Don't blame, don't tire kick. If you think that they made a mistake, it's okay to point it out to them, but it just doesn't work. They will lower their head in shame and never talk to you again. Don't be impatient, don't tire kick. Definitely don't be submitting multiple offers if you're not planning to go ahead with all of them in case due diligence checks out. Don't be pushy, respect the pace. And a lot of times foreigners come in with this mentality of, I got the money, I want to spend it, you should be serving me. It doesn't work like that here. The fact that you have money, yes, the agent would like to conduct a deal with you, but if your behavior or the hassle involved or the type of pace or expectations that you have from them are too much of a hassle, then they will not conduct the deal with you no matter how much money you've got. So I'm here, I got the money, do what I want, just doesn't fly here. A few words on property managers. They tend to make even less money when they manage your property for you. This is mainly for investment properties, not short-term stays. We're talking about long-term leases. You've got an investment property, you're leasing it out. They make about $25 a month if they're renting the property out for 80,000 yen, which is, again, some of the cash cows that we're dealing with. A good property manager will make or break your investment portfolio. If the property is vacant or things are just not going smoothly, they put in a crappy tenant, that will kill your portfolio profitability. You do not need a license to become a property manager. It's recommended, but it's not necessary like it is for real estate agents. So most of the market is not licensed, not monitored by any regulatory bodies, anything of that sort. And it is the crappiest job in the world, especially if you're dealing with these kinds of properties. Not only is the landlord demanding, don't even want to talk about the tenant. This is Japan, there's no crime and, you know, ghettos and drug labs and things exploding, but there's people dying in properties, there's elderly men with far too much time on their hand that have no one to talk to. It's not a pleasant job. And you will need to push them because they're managing hundreds of properties for $25 a month. They don't have the time to be proactive on your behalf. If you don't tell them what to do, they will not do it. And there are very few of them who would be able to serve, and non-Japanese speakers or people who are not resident in Japan. If you don't have a Japanese proxy or assistant or somebody who can do the communications with you, find one. Because to deal with a property manager in English is a near impossibility in the vast majority of cases. Again, we're not talking about the high end of the market. We're talking about where you make your money, the cash cows. That is it. Questions? Tracy. To outsource the property search, right. Well, one of the best ways to do it is to sign up for AkiaMart, of which we will have a conversation shortly. For a very low subscription, they will, depending on what you're searching for, at the moment these are mainly vacant homes that are appearing on the MLS websites, on the big Japanese property websites. That's a good, cheap, very tech-savvy way to look for vacant homes in Japan. A buyer-side agent will research for you at no charge, but if you don't maintain that relationship and do all of the things that we've just discussed, then you'll have a very short relationship with them and you'll have to go find another one. So the way to do it is to get yourself a buyer-side agent and be on good terms with them. Then they will do it for free. So, yes, there are a lot of people buying vacant homes, a lot of foreigners, non-resident foreigners buying vacant homes or many other kinds of properties in Japan. As to how serious they are, I wouldn't know because we very early on in our career have decided to charge people in advance. So when they get to us, they're serious. But as for the people who are bothering agents with tire-kicking requests and then end up disappearing, I'm sure there are plenty of those as well. Financing for non-residents might be available by some particular lenders for straight-out investment properties with long-term leases in place, not so much for holiday homes or short-term stay properties. I don't know of many solutions for that yet. Any questions? Yep. Some of them do both. But in many cases, it's two different companies or definitely two different departments in the same company, one handling purchase and sale and one handling management. And some property management companies are just that. They do just property management.
But they do just property management. How do they actually rent them? Where do they find people to rent them?
By listing them online for rent. That's the maximum government mandated. It could be lower if you negotiate it in advance, but it's very rarely done. No, so there's almost nothing that's mandated or legally required in the property management field except handling emergencies like electricity or water when they occur. In that case, they need to immediately fix it and just inform the landlord as opposed to getting the permission to fix it. But the going rate is usually 5% plus tax, so 5.5% monthly. They also charge fees when they place a new tenant. And they also charge fees depending on the property manager, but they might charge a fee when they renew the lease once every couple of years. And they also charge similar fees to the tenants themselves. So those are all, they're not, again, in some particular areas, for example, in Shikoku, which I guess for some reason only has two or three property managers per city, they charge 8 or even 10%. Some companies like Apaman, who say that they've got global national coverage, think that they can charge 8, 9, 10%. We personally have not found any big advantage in working with them because each office rep is totally different to the other. There's no advantage in the national coverage. But some of them do try and occasionally get away with charging more. The industry average is 5% though. Yes, Zoom room. Sorry, coming back. I'm assuming the question refers to price. Yeah, well, inside Tokyo was also quite cheap after the bubble burst and 25 years of deflation took place. That started recovering in late 2012 and has been going up ever since. Now, for the first time in many years, rural areas are gaining in value too. The main reason for that, and especially in the rural areas, is because of Japan's population trends. People are moving out of these little townships and villages and into the bigger metropolitan centers. A lot of abandoned homes in these rural areas or even in cities themselves. But that, again, that has not been the trend for the last 15 years. And we like to say that we have no idea if it will, you know, reverse, keep staying high, keep saying no. It's definitely higher than it's been in the last 15 years. So if anyone's sitting on their thumbs waiting for it to go down, no guarantee of that. Yes, thank you. Short-term varies usually between 20 to 30%, and some of them charge it on the gross, including utility fees and cleaning fees. Some of it charge it on the net. It really varies by company. Generally speaking, between 20 to 30% of whatever the guest is paying, but they don't charge any placement fees. They only charge a percentage of the... for example, a normal property management company which charges 5% will charge you, depending on the situation, between 1 to 3 months of rent when they place a new tenant. So short-term stay managers don't do any of that, usually. 20 to 30%, depending on what's included and who the property management company is, of the gross or net revenue. So it fluctuates a bit. Yeah. Yep. Depends on the Scrivener. I guess we work with two or three companies that we've been working with for the last, again, 13 years now. Whenever we can use them, things are super smooth. They've got the two or three document templates that they're used to working with. They know exactly what a notary public certificate and stamp looks like. If you're working with this, well, if you're working with, for example, if you're selling a property, then the buyer gets to choose which judicial scrivener to appoint. In which case, they'll often appoint somebody who's, again, never worked with a non-resident foreigner in the past. So then they'll start asking for outlandish stuff, like, you live in Hong Kong, you're originally from Sweden, please go to the Swedish embassy and get their certificate. Oh, you live in Canada, your wife is Japanese, she doesn't live in Japan, but we need her to go over to the Japanese consulate in Ontario, which is like 3,500 kilometers from where they happen to be living, or I can't remember the names of the cities, because she's Japanese, so we need to get a Japanese. So they'll have ridiculous requests. But if you've worked with somebody who's worked with foreigners in the past, it can be very, very smooth. And we're happy to recommend them. They don't necessarily speak English, but they know how to work with foreigners. Any other questions? No? Yes? Yeah, so the Japanese term for a property lawyer slash administrative or judicial scrivener, shihoshoshi in Japanese, there is a property lawyer involved in most of these real estate transactions on the ownership transfer side. So they will confirm the validity of the title deed, they'll confirm that the property doesn't have any liens or other debts related to it. They'll make sure that money has exchanged hands properly as per the purchase contract, and they will transfer the title deed and registration over to the new owner's name. This is the extent of their involvement. It is possible to buy and sell properties in Japan without a realtor being involved. It is possible to buy and sell properties in Japan directly between owners without a property lawyer being involved. With the former, I mean, in our case, for example, if we have one of our customers selling a property and somebody, you know, another one of our customers wants to purchase it, then a realtor will not be involved. I would never advise to buy and sell properties without a lawyer being involved. It just, even if your family members, families break up over stuff like that. So it's really make sure that somebody's involved in the process. Yep.
What happens if there, like, a person buys a house on loan and then they want to then sell that house? How does the loan get transferred?
The loan would normally not get transferred. What normally would happen is, depending on whether the buyer has qualified for a mortgage of their own or if they're a cash buyer. So in the case of a cash buyer, in any case, the judicial scrivener, the property lawyer, will meet with the seller at the bank branch on the morning of settlement. And they will use the proceeds of the settlement amount to settle the remainder of the loan. And that's going to be a part of the ownership transfer. Then it might be a case of the money coming in via a different loan, might be a cash purchase, but they'll settle the loan as part of the settlement. All right. Thank you very much. that is sometimes still the case. We do a lot of electronic transfers for settlement. It's very rare that we would have to actually come out with the suitcases of cash, but some very old school agents or even some very old school sellers and buyers insist on doing that still, but it's not the norm anymore, no. But what they do is they sit right next to you to make sure that you've transferred the money and show them the receipt on your screen, kind of thing. That does sometimes happen, or share the screen with them via Zoom if that's the case. That does happen still. All right, thank you very much.